Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Our first guest is bona fide Irish pop royalty, Samantha Mumba. How are you? You are very, very welcome to the show.
Fantastic, thank you.
You were just actually playing at the mighty Hoopla Festival in London, and you are due to play at Beyond the Pale and the Mother Pride Block Party. How does it feel after all this time to have those massive crowds singing your songs back to you?
I mean, honestly, I swear I have just, I think, imposter syndrome. Even as the show was going on, I'm standing there going, this is insane. Like, it's amazing. Mighty Hoopla is always a beautiful audience. It's just one of those things. They're great. And actually, I'm so excited for Beyond the Pale, because let me not make a liar of myself, but it is my first ever Irish festival. I've done like shows in Dublin and kind of different radio shows, but in terms of an actual like summer festival, this will be my first one. So I'm very excited.
That's kind of insane. And something else that is really insane is that your first single, Gotta Tell You, which you also co-wrote at the tender age of 17, is 25 years old this week.
Yes, just turned 25 on Monday. My oldest child, who would have known? I mean, yeah, insane. And I was actually forgetting about it myself, and somebody said it to me and I was like, oh God, you're right. It is.
And what do you think it is? Like, is it nostalgia, or what is it that about those songs in particular that still strike a chord? Because when you really just burst onto the scene, it was so many other stars, and you were just part of this big milieu of female talent.
Well, thank you so much. Listen, I think it's just one of those things. I would imagine kind of most of the people that, you know, would have liked my music, we're kind of the same age now. So there is a nostalgia feel. I mean, I feel that myself, even listening to, you know, songs that I would have loved back in the day. I think it was just a different time, an easier time. You know, it's just feel good, I think, for a lot of people. And I think that's why it's such a lovely reaction and response from the audience, because it's just, I don't know, it's just nostalgia. Which is great.
Yeah, and it's not just a feel-good factor. Like, I mean, the chorus from Gotta Tell You is still on Billboard 100's greatest choruses of the 21st century. How do you feel about that particular song now? Like, do you groan internally when you hear it, or are you still enthused after 25 years?
Honestly, I can honestly, hand on heart, say I'm just so proud of it. Like, I still love that song. I actually feel like, you know, if it had been kind of rejigged a little bit, I feel like it could still be relevant today. I don't think it's dated or aged terribly at all. It's still one of my favorite ones to perform as well. And I think maybe it's because it was my first ever single. That song changed my life, you know, so it would be very special for me anyway. Thankfully, God, 25 years old, I'm actually still not sick of it.
I have to ask you about this year's Eurovision. How are you feeling now that the proverbial dust has settled?
I mean, for me, it was a very, very personal thing, me even entering into that and doing it. I think I very much so play it safe with everything I do, you know, and I kind of always weigh up the pros and the cons. And I think for that, I just wanted to push myself out of my comfort zone. So even doing that and doing, you know, a song competition isn't something that I had on my bingo list at 42 at all.
No, because you had taken the world by storm. You'd taken Ireland, the UK charts, you know, the US billboards by storm. And like, was that a strange thing to come back into what for some people might say, well, it's a bit of a local, you know, competition? What risks did you perceive in it?
Yes and no. I mean, I think at some point as well, if I'd gone with the attitude of, oh, I shouldn't be doing this, I mean, that would just be ego, isn't it? Like, that's like, let's be realistic. And it's a song competition, and I wouldn't want to represent Ireland with a song that Ireland didn't want either, or do something. You know, I think fair is fair. And I think if that's the process, then that's what it was. And I just, honestly, I was just proud of myself for doing it, because it definitely wouldn't have been something that I would have been, you know, necessarily even thinking I would have the balls to do, if I'm being totally honest, like a few years ago. So, I loved the process of all of it, you know.
And were you surprised at the reaction that you received to your observations, perhaps, on the ultimate selection process?
Listen, I think everybody's entitled to an opinion. And I was a bit surprised. That wasn't even the focus. Like, I think I just, what I wrote was just at the end of the post. The focus of the post was actually just thanking everybody on the team who'd worked so hard on it. I didn't see what the big deal was. And I woke up the next morning.
You must have known that little flourish would set social media on fire.
Here's the thing. I mean, maybe is it that I'm not even like, I think I maybe post on Instagram once a month or something. Like maybe there's like, I don't know. But I mean, I certainly stand by what I said. I don't take it back. And I think, you know, fair is fair. If people can give their opinion on national television, surely I'm allowed to give my opinion on my own Instagram page.
And yes,
I think that's fair.
You did. Can I ask you your opinion on this? You know, obviously we didn't get to the final this year, unfortunately. And I know there was a time we were afraid another Eurovision final might bankrupt the country in terms of hosting it. But what do you think as a singer-songwriter, or where do you think we go as a country from here in that competition?
I actually have a lot of thoughts on this, but I would say I do think it maybe deserves its own, you know, ideally, I think if it's, you know, it's a song competition, it's a, you know, to perform, I think maybe it should actually be in a venue that is set up even sound wise for musicians, you know, because I don't think that that's the setup. I think that would be great. And I think maybe just, I don't know. I think I love kind of the variety of it. I love kind of the process of, you know, kind of that it's open to everybody. But I don't know. I think if I had one immediate one, I would think that it should be its own show, and it definitely should be televised in a music venue that is set up for singers.
Precisely,
you know, I think for sure that. Yeah.
Looking back, it's hard to describe you as a veteran at 42, but looking back on your career, because you started so young, did you feel like a bit of a trailblazer, I guess, for Irish pop at the time, or were you just so caught up just in the whirlwind of it all?
I think, to be honest, I think looking back, I'm like, my God, like I would maybe more so kind of feel that now, but it's like at the time I was a teenager, you know, teenagers, you don't care. You just, you're bold and you're, you know, confident, and you don't second guess anything or question anything. So I think when I was in it, I don't think I necessarily felt that way. I think I was in such a bubble of just kind of work, and I didn't have, you know, like I had, like there was no social media, there was no way to kind of even reach out to people or have that contact, you know, where you'd kind of even be aware of what was going on. It's looking back though, I think it was such an incredible time. I'm just so grateful. I've had such just good experiences, you know.
Did you think that part of the reason why you were so confident was that you had a certain kind of independence that came with writing your own songs? You know, just, you weren't just a pop product, you were actually...
You know what, I think that probably did help to an extent, because there's an ownership there, you know. And even obviously when I was recording my first album, there would have been instances where I was in sessions and did songs that I wasn't a writer on, and there was a huge disconnect there for me. I don't connect to music as much as I do when I'm involved in the writing process. So I'm very, very grateful that I even signed my publishing deal before I signed my record deal. That would have been quite unheard of then, particularly, you know, for like a young girl. I would have been, what, 15, maybe 16, signing that. So that's kind of one of the, even looking back and I'm thinking, you know, God, some contracts could have been better, or, you know, kind of advice could have been better. But definitely I am grateful that that was the one thing that definitely was done right, was kind of being able to be involved in that regard.
As an older singer-songwriter now, someone who's been, you know, in the business quite a while, when you look back at those, the noughties pop stars, for want of a better phrase, there was so much that we didn't know that was going on behind the scenes. You know, when you look at artists like Britney Spears, when you look at, you know, different experiences that we now perhaps look back on with a very different lens, and perhaps a little bit of a shame about the way some of those, particularly female artists, were treated. When you look back now, what are your reflections on the industry?
I mean, listen, it's not a nice industry. It's not a good industry. It doesn't have artists' best interests at heart. I'm very grateful that I've, you know, and certainly as a young girl, I was well able to take care of myself, stand up for myself. You know, I just had a confidence in that regard that was kind of instilled in me from a young age. I was, you know, just always able to take care of myself. I've definitely been in scenarios and things that, looking back, that at the time it would have been like, oh, that's just banter, or, oh, that's just, you know, that absolutely would have been wildly inappropriate. But I think it's great that all of, you know, the things that are kind of coming out are coming out, and I think things are being exposed.
Did you feel any pressure though, Samantha? Because look, I mean, you know, when I look back at that time, it was Heat magazine, you know, pap shots on the beach. The whole trend at the time was size zero. It was the era of sort of, you know, lads mags and everything that went with that. And I'm wondering, did you feel any pressure to be a certain way as a female pop star? Like, I mean, did you ever contemplate changing your own body or body image?
I mean, listen, I was lucky in the sense that I was like, I could eat anything. Now, I wish I still had that metabolism today. I do not. But then thankfully, I could eat anything. So I didn't worry about that. But there was definitely, listen, I am a curvy woman. I was a curvy girl then as well. I was scheduled to have my boobs done, and thankfully didn't go to the appointment. And 1,000,000% without a shadow of a doubt, that was just on the pressure of feeling like my body had to be a certain way, or, you know, to be seen as attractive, all of that stuff. And I'm so grateful. And this isn't, you know, I think people should do whatever they want with their bodies. I just know that for me, had I done that, I absolutely would have regretted it, because I wasn't doing it because I wanted it. It was because I thought that that was, you know, the aesthetic that was attractive or seen to be attractive. And it was that aesthetic. You know, back in the day, it was the Pamela Anderson. It was all of that. It was the tiny and the big boobs. And, you know, yeah. So I'm thankful that I didn't go ahead with that. But definitely felt that pressure.
You're so grateful, but I imagine it must have been quite grueling as well. You know, this sort of pop star who had broken out, not just on the national or European, but the international stage. You were in movies. You still weren't even 20 at that stage. Were the demands such that you reached a point of burnout, or what impact did that have on you?
You know, I think probably... while there would have definitely been burnout, it kind of just wasn't an option, you know? There just would have been, like, it just was nonstop. I remember sometimes I'd fly even from LA to Dublin just for an evening, just to have an evening at home, and I'd be straight on a plane the next day back to LA, like, just to have a little bit of home or normality. And I know even when I was filming The Time Machine, I think that was about 3 months filming. So we would shoot that Monday to Friday, and then every weekend I'd be flying to different parts of America to do music promo and radio shows. And it got to the point where my migraines actually got so bad that the production company sent me for CAT scans just to make sure that I was okay. And I genuinely think it was just exhaustion. But even in that, it was like, it wasn't optional to have time off in that regard. But, you know, equally, I don't regret any of that. I think it was incredible opportunities. You know, I was the right age to be doing it and have the energy to be doing it. But yeah, I mean, it is and definitely was a lot, you know.
And then in a weird sort of quirk of fate and through no fault of your own, your second album didn't actually get made, and you ended up in a sense taking time out, perhaps maybe that wasn't planned. What happened at that time?
It was one of those things. And to be honest, the album, I have all of that music, funnily enough. I probably should release it just so that it's out there. But it just, the whole process, it was very stop and start. And it was, I was in that kind of hold. A lot of artists, unfortunately, were affected by it. It was when the labels merged. And so, you know, my label wouldn't release music with me, but they wouldn't let me out of my deal. So it was kind of just, everything was just put on pause, which at the time I was actually really grateful for. I was ready to not live out of a suitcase. I was able to buy my house and actually just have, you know, that feeling of a normal life and be with my friends and be a young girl in her early 20s. So I'm actually very grateful for that. It was just a weird place to be, because there was nothing happening in that regard.
Well, were you afraid you'd lose your currency, or that somehow your career would fall off a cliff? I imagine in the artist world, you're only as good as your next song, not even your
absolutely
last one.
But if I'm being honest, I don't even think that was my frame of mind at the time. I was actually just loving kind of getting to actually enjoy the fruits of all my labor, you know, and have fun and be with my friends and be, you know, in my house and just kind of have that time. I needed that time. And so then I moved to LA about a year and a half after that as well. Anyway, I genuinely do feel like things happen in the way that they're supposed to happen. And I think, you know, sometimes you can be protected from things that, you know, that don't make sense to you at the time. But I'm actually grateful for how things came about. I think I've had amazing opportunities, amazing experiences, but it hasn't compromised me or like my actual life, you know.
And what would you like to do next? I was thinking of you when I was reading about Taylor Swift, you know, spending nearly $400 million to buy back her original masters and being in control of her, you know, in control of her music. Look, I mean, would you like to go out and maybe release on your own now, or what does the future look like for you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I love kind of getting to be independent and have that creative freedom. And like I said, even joking, I mean, Jesus, I could release a song a day for the next 2 months if I wanted to. I don't want to, but just to have the freedom of that is great. So no, working on new music, still working on TV. The new season of Harry Wilde is just out. All of these festivals over the summer are amazing. Obviously, I'm a mother first and foremost. So that's kind of the main priority for me and wife. But yeah, I think listen, life is good. And I think I'm just very, yeah, I'm just grateful for where everything is.
And I'm thinking back to you in your Billy Barry days when you were so young. Your daughter, Sage, if she turned around to you now, or even in 10 years' time, saying she wanted to be a pop star, knowing what you now know, would you go full Kris Jenner, or would you try and discourage her?
No, I would be the ultimate Kris Jenner. And hopefully Sage would make enough money that I could get her facelift as well. no, listen, I support my daughter in any and everything she does. She hasn't shown any interest in singing so far, but she's obsessed with dancing. She's an incredible dancer, and she's actually a really, really talented. She's big into special effects makeup. And she's really, really good at it too. So that's, I think she's just in the living room at the moment as well, doing a full face. So listen, those are her passions for now. So we're nurturing those in any way we can.
You mentioned social media earlier, Samantha, and, you know, growing up in a different era when you didn't have, I suppose, that direct communication with people, with all of the highs and lows that goes with social media. What's your own relationship with it these days? Observations on the Eurovision notwithstanding.
So aside from that, do you know, listen, I love Instagram. I love, you know, watching people's stories and posts. I'm just so bad at posting myself. I overthink everything. So I've amazing photos and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to post that. Or like, I can't think of what to say to put. That's why I don't. I'm really, really bad. Like I said, I really wasn't joking. I think I probably maybe post once a month, but I'm trying to get better at that. And, you know, listen, I'm just in the moment. I'm living life and enjoying it.
Have we lost some of the mystique about our, you know, our pop stars, our actors, the kind of our celebrities, because they do share so much on social media? Like, I mean, do you try and guard your privacy and that of your family a little bit?
Listen, I think very much so. I mean, you know, my husband would be quite private, so I'm not going to be posting him every day. That would be strange, you know. And my daughter, she just expects to be on every Instagram post that I post. So she's the total opposite. So it's just trying to find, I think, a balance. But also, like, I am 42. I do kind of, it does shock me being out and about. And the process that I see kind of younger girls and guys going through, you know, 20 million photos of your food before you've even taken a bite, or a million selfies. Like, I'd be mortified to do that. So maybe that's an age thing. I don't know. But I am trying to get better. Well, so, yes, I'm a work in progress.
Aren't we all? Listen, there is a lot of interest here in Ireland in US politics. And, you know, you're living there. And I was just wondering, what is the mood like in the US at the moment? Do you follow US politics closely at all?
I don't know that there's a way to escape it, to be honest. But listen, we live in LA, and I think of, you know, of all the places to live, I think it, yeah, that's our home at the moment. And I'm grateful that, you know, we get home here a lot as well. Even now, you know, I'm home for the whole month of June, which is so lovely. And I, you know, I was home for 3 weeks in January, February. Like, I get back a lot. So it's kind of a nice balance. I feel like I've a good equal balance of, you know, obviously in LA, I love, like, our house is there, but I love the weather. We have a lovely lifestyle. And then getting to come home kind of keeps us grounded and sane as well. Yeah. So,
and the accent, you're still a quintessential Irish girl. And would you ever see yourself coming back to Ireland?
I'm at the point where I definitely would love to buy somewhere, or have even somewhere just small that I kind of had a little base here for when I was home. That would be great, because we do actually spend, you know, a decent amount of time here. If I could kind of split and do half and half, that would be amazing. I think I've just been traveling from such a young age. I just love going to different places all the time, but I think home is home ultimately. So that's the goal at
and
the
so
moment.
It sounds strange saying you're home for your first Irish festival, but
my first Irish festival.
What have you got
I know.
Planned for the rest of the year?
Well, I've got, oh God, some filming coming up. I'm definitely getting back into the studio, recording some more things. The summer is busy. There's festivals. There's a few more in the UK as well that I'm doing as well. So I'm going to be back and forth. The year's kind of gone, isn't it? It's like when you kind of get through the summer, it's only a few more months and then we're into another year again. It's nuts. But yeah, listen, I've a full life, to say the least, but all is well. So yeah.
And we people will be able to catch you at Beyond the Pale Festival in the Glendalough Estate. I think it's from June 13th to the 15th. And if you want to get some tickets, you can go to itsbeyondthepale.ie. But Samantha Mumba, it has been absolutely wonderful having you on. And just because I can't resist it, well, as we say goodbye to you, we're also going to say, because it's 25 this year, we're going to play Gotta Tell You. Thanks for joining
us. Fantastic. Thank you so much.